Axis Mundi.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
It's 2024, y'all. An election year that will change our lives forever. We are committed to safeguarding our democracy from religious nationalisms and extremisms, and we need your help to do it. For a few bucks a month, you can become a premium Straight White American Jesus subscriber and help us keep doing this work of educating in order to activate. If you subscribe, you'll get ad-free listening, access to our 500-episode archive, a premium episode every month. Check it out now in the show notes or go to www.axismundi.supercast.com. Welcome to Straight White American Jesus. I'm Brad Onishi, faculty at the University of San Francisco, here today with my co-host,
Dan Miller, professor of religion and social thought at Landmark College. Good to see you, Brad, for our special sort of longish episode full of ranting and raving and whatever else we do today.
Bonus episode today. So if you're a subscriber, buckle up. We got about 2 hours of the Brad and Dan show here. If you're not a subscriber, make sure to subscribe now so you can get the full episode and listen to everything we're talking about. We're going to answer all the AMAs. We're going to get into something that's really under Dan's skin, which is this idea that if you say Christian nationalism, you're calling all Christians Christian nationalists. But we're going to start today with a story from me, Dan. This is special episode number 3. First one, you told a story about Arkansas and getting arrested in the parking lot while wearing a Bible chain. Still, like, there's still people in the Discord that are like, we need that merch. I will buy a Dan Miller Bible chain merch item. So
Donald Trump was peddling Bibles this week. So, like, why we should get in on that. Yeah.
More on that at the weekly roundup. The last time I told a story, I talked about Oxford and some of that business. Today, I want to go back to my ministry days, and we're going to be joined in a second by one of my former colleagues in youth ministry. This is crazy, Dan, a blast from the past, my friend Jason. So he'll be here hopefully soon, barring any issues. But I started in ministry when I was 18. So many of you out there know I converted to Christianity when I was 14. By the time I was 18, and Dan, I think you can probably relate to this. I think a lot of you out there can relate to this. I was a weird guy. I told you all about proselytizing at high school and telling everyone about Jesus at the movie theater. So there were definitely settings in high school where I was just cringy, but I was a superstar in youth group. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Like, when I went to youth group, the leaders loved me because I was so into Jesus. I was willing to help out. I was willing to, like, greet new people, welcome them in. Like, when you're a youth leader, you want certain kind of kids in the group because they're like the ones that not only are easy to deal with, but they're super into Jesus and they're super into helping other people, like, feel comfortable in the group. And, like, I was that guy. So, but I go through all of high school. And by the time I graduate high school, the youth pastor said, hey, why don't we hire you part-time, a couple hundred bucks a month, and you can be like an intern for the junior high, like, side of the ministry. And I was like, that's my dream. It's my dream job. A job I quit, Dan, to do that job.
I don't think I know
this. Blockbuster Video. So my...
yes.
My two jobs in high school, when I was 16... like, literally almost on the day I turned 16, I started working at McDonald's. And then when I was 17, 18, I can't remember, I stepped up to Blockbuster Video. That's where I was working. I would work the, like, 3 to 11 shift after school and somehow do homework in between there. I don't know how. And yeah, I mean, you know, let's just do it, folks. Memory lane. Y'all remember Blockbuster Video? Y'all remember, like, getting to the store and hoping they had the video game you wanted and it wasn't rented, or, like, you know, you really wanted to see
so
Drew Barrymore and Ever After, and you're like, oh, they don't have it. What am I going to do?
Ugly memory, right? So the end of Blockbuster, and they were trying to compete with Netflix, which back then mostly made its money by sending DVDs. So you could get Blockbuster videos. We're having fun story time. You could get Blockbuster videos like that also in the mail. And then they had this thing where you could go to Blockbuster and then turn them back in and like get a DVD. So the summer that I was reading for my comp exam, so like you just got like this list of books that's forever long. And you got to read them all and get ready for your PhD comps, like whatever. All I did that summer is I read for that. For reasons I still don't fully know, I listened like the full genre of like 90s grunge metal. This is way past the 90s. And then I would get the videos from the X-Files, and then I would go trade them in at the Blockbuster, get the other video, and I rewatched the entire X-Files series. So that was my, like, I don't know, sort of infantilizing back in the 90s phase or something. But Blockbuster looms large until it, you know, obviously lost the battle to streaming. So, yeah.
This is the perfect moment to bring in Jason. So, Jason, I was just telling everyone.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Jason.
I graduated high school, and I quit my job at Blockbuster Video to be an intern in the junior high department at Rose Drive Friends, and I worked under none other than you as my boss. You were the brand new, newly minted youth pastor at that time. This is 1999. This is like right... Y2K mania.
These two data points also seem like they're just the first in a string of terrible career choices you've made since.
What I think is that Brad should leave for a while, and I think that Jason and I should just talk. Like, just I think it's going to, a lot of things are going to come into focus. And you know, yeah.
Jason, let's welcome you in. We've known each other 25 years now, and we're pals and text a lot, talk a lot. Friendship goes back to those ministry days, but
I was a groomsman in your first wedding.
You were a groomsman. Yeah. And to be fair,
Hawaiian shirt at your behest, like a freaking idiot. I did you, it though.
To be and fair, I would do it again. I want to say a couple things about that. A white guy has never looked worse in a Hawaiian shirt than that day.
I agree.
But B, yeah, I haven't seen Dan Miller in a Hawaiian shirt.
I've got competition.
B, it wasn't that big of an honor because I think there was like 38 to 40 groomsmen in that wedding. A lot of people were asked. My barista, I asked a lot of people.
These were ultimately at the time, and given how young everyone was, these were rituals that we all understood were just desperate maneuvers so that we could have sex with somebody. All right, well, just stand by my side. Everybody will know it's fine. It's sanctioned now. I can go, and that's going to sustain a relationship in the long term.
Well, I mean, there's a lot more to it, but yes, that's evangelical culture in a nutshell. All right, real quick, before we get to what I think was both somehow the nadir and the crescendo of our youth ministry experience, tell us a little bit about you. So you have like some serious evangelical bona fides.
For anyone who's read your book, I mean, I grew up in the belly of the beast, given that I was born in Garden Grove right there in Orange County, while my parents attended the church you and I would eventually go on to work for and be ousted from in certain various ways. My parents worked with Campus Crusade for Christ their entire adult working lives. And, you know, I grew up in Colorado Springs. I worked for one summer during college at Focus on the Family as a tour guide there during college. And most of the rules I've seen that came into being at Focus on the Family regarding tour guides do seem mostly to be in response to things that I did. Probably very much like the church we both worked at. I think everything you are and aren't allowed to do at this point is mostly because of what shit you and I pulled. Come on.
So your bona fides, I mean, it's interesting because I think we all three of us have some similar like background, but you know, Dan was in Arkansas. He was in Colorado for also a bunch of his life. I was a convert, but you really grew up like birth to young adulthood, like ensconced in evangelical culture. You're one of those kids whose life, whose parents, whose siblings, everything about, you know, your experience from age zero to age 25 was evangelical saturated.
I was ensconced AF, Brad. It's true. It's not just I was drinking all of the Kool-Aid. I was born like swimming in it and having no concept that there could be anything other than Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, there is a key to a lot of like what you guys have talked about on your show for so long. A lot of right-wing projects and high-control religious systems are no exception to this, but the idea of preventing self-awareness and teaching what's really a very punitive kind of carceral state of being, teaching people who you want to keep there in that place, not just how to be a good inmate and think of yourself as deserving everything you're getting, but also how to be your own best warden, how to keep yourself in there, put self-police. That's really key to a lot of this because you can't have people thinking too freely. And, you know, I know you have questions, but I've come to think of a lot of what you and I did in our overlapping roles at a mega church in Orange County a couple of decades ago as really a microcosm of the larger systems that what we were doing fit into and was a reflection of. So, yeah.
So, Dan, here's what we're going to do. I'm just going to tell you the basic facts of this story. And I'm going to let you ask a couple questions to set up how we got there. And then Jason and I will just give you an oral history of what happened this evening. Because I want to preface this by saying in ex-evangelical circles, youth pastors are the easiest people to dunk on for good reason. I don't think Jason's running away from that. I'm not. Youth pastors are often too enthusiastic for their own good. They're often cringily trying to relate to youth culture. They are often, and this is a very serious point, like overstepping bounds with like, you know, the 21-year-old youth pastor somehow starts dating the girl that just turned 18 in his youth group, that kind of business. So neither Jason nor I had any of that kind of stuff, that latter, you know, that kind of thing happening. You know,
I did for us. Me when I was the one in youth path in the youth group and having youth pastors I was under, that was very much part of the thing.
Yeah. So you expect you experienced that.
Yeah, we avoided recreating that, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. That's a pretty low bar, it seems like.
Oh no. I'm not trying to be a hero here. I just want everyone listening to know that My time as a youth pastor was surely cringeworthy, was surely full of a lot of things, but it was not full of any sort of creepy grooming situation. You know what I mean? Like, 'cause that's just, I think that's what people think of when they think youth pastor. So I just want to put that out there. All right, Dan, Jason started at the church in summer of 1999.
Yep.
I started at the church summer of 1999. I had been part of the youth group. I had been kind of this convert, golden boy, part of the youth group. Jason was more of like a legacy, in terms of mafia, he was like, his parents were made, you know, they were in, right?
The evangelical
and
mafia.
So he,
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were OGs. And there was part of me that knew this was the case and probably informed how I went about going to get the job and interviewing and all that stuff. I had a lot of, you know, pressure points I could hit. But I had no idea what I was doing. The first thing I did, Onishi, was turn 22.
Yeah.
And all of the talk of like training me and helping me know what I was doing and setting me up for success, none of that came to me.
Oh, so no. Oh, no.
Winging it, man.
No, you, I mean, I was fresh out of high school and you just graduated college. You show up, you're supposed to take over this youth group that is about 200 kids and you're working with me and another guy and you've never met us. And we're supposed to be in charge of the spiritual lives of teenagers and help them grow as human beings. And that means dealing with everything from, hey, are there dinosaurs in the Bible, to getting phone calls like, hey, my 13-year-old ran away from home, or my 14-year-old is pregnant. I mean, that's the kind of stuff we would see in this kind of role, right?
All of it, of our pay grade.
Didn't understand. training, maturity. You know, we just didn't have anything.
Might as well ask me to give somebody marriage counsel. I wouldn't have.
Well, that's why I got married at such a young age, Jason. Yeah. Then I could start.
Sure, whatever counsel I gave you was indispensable.
All right, so Dan, it's a Wednesday. We spent most Wednesday nights with the youth group playing a game outside. I'm just going to give you the bare facts. I'm not going to tell any story right now, and I'm going to let you ask a question. On the night that we are going to discuss just now, one of our fellow youth minister types showed up. His name was Rick, and he had a cooler full of fresh fish, about 6 inches in length, each of them. We then held one side of a water balloon launcher. I believe Jason and another guy did it because they're discriminatory and they're both tall, and they said I would be uneven if I held it, which I'm not bitter about or anything. So I think I was watching.
These are the three-person water balloon launchers where two people are holding the ends.
Third
and
one's in
third.
The frat boy water balloon launchers, basically. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the one.
So we are then telling all of the children in the youth group, okay, everyone who wants a turn, get up here, and you can put one of the fish in this water balloon launcher and fire it straight toward a handball wall where it will explode.
But I'm missing detail. I had myself personally designed and executed a mural that was draped over the handball wall, providing a target. And it was meaningless. It was just something to hit. But look, man, these fish, whole entire raw fish, I just wish high-speed cameras were like as accessible then as they are now, because this would have been epic. Slow motion guys would have had field days, right? Just imagine
this is content creation.
Leaving the hands of a 12-year-old standing between two adults who are facilitating the obliteration, the inevitable just defamation of a fish corpse. And it weaving its way through the air to the target as though it were still in water and still ready to make some kind of spiritual point. Exploding. And then, okay, the name of the youth group, which I had changed when I came and was hired, is Fish Hook, as in an homage to Fishers of Men. So,
yep.
Really, really profound. Okay, deep stuff. So how does this help drive home whatever point we're trying to make, whatever culture we're trying to create here for these kids? I don't know. But was it provocative? Yes. Was it violent? Uh-huh. Are we still talking about it 5 years later? You freaking bet. You're sweet bit. We are.
Dan, before Jason and I get going on this, just go ahead. Ask your questions. You want to know what happened in the hours leading up to this to make this decision? How did the children react? Were there repercussions?
Yeah,
ask
so,
your questions.
Well, my
Dan
first
Moore. Go ahead.
Was going to get, because, all right, so here's my, what I was never a youth pastor, and I went, and we'll circle back around to this. I went from being the super youth group kid, like you're talking about, sort of idolizing the youth pastor or whatever, to I graduated, go to this Baptist college, have a call to ministry, whatever, and now I like look down on youth pastors, like within the Baptist world, because I'm training to be a pastor. I'm not going to do the JV youth pastor thing. I'm going to go like, so there was that, right? But so my recollection of both being in youth group, and I wasn't a youth pastor, but I was involved in lots of like, you know, weekend things, helping friends at their churches or volunteering or all that kind of stuff, was what was the purported spiritual point? Because I feel like that was always the youth group thing, right? It's like, let's come up with crazy shit to do that'll get kids to show up on a Wednesday instead of doing something else, or like that'll get them to come to a fifth quarter after the football game instead of going out and drinking, or get them to show up the night after graduation or like whatever. And then we'll kind of manufacture some spiritual lesson out of it. And so like before you told me that the name of the youth group was Fish Hook, I wrote down, I was like, loaves and fishes? Are we talking about loaves and fishes? Are we talking about fishers of men? Are we, so like, that was the first thing is what was the purported tortured sort of spiritual message that was like developed out of the obliterated
every bit fish. On the nose, every bit is on the nose, as you are saying, just ham-fisted, just right out there in the open. No nuance whatsoever. Super,
it's like if there yeah, was a control F function back then, you're like, where does the Bible talk about fish? And like that becomes the Bible message, right? Yeah. For that night, tied in with blowing fish up against the wall.
Yeah, it's very much in the evangelical tradition of figuring out what it is you want to do anyway, and then finding a way to sort of after the fact back into it and justify it or make it meaningful or whatever. Just, I want to see fish explode, okay? And you're going to love it.
As both of you know, right? You do all things to the glory of Christ, right? So that was always that kind of like, we can take anything and sort of baptize it and turn it into a spiritual lesson. So yeah, that's the first thing I think of is like, yeah, not surprised. I am going to say from my pastor days, in my head, number one, this doesn't surprise me that this was a thing that happened, right? Number two, the church that I worked at, I can totally picture the wall we would have used for that. And I don't know what that means that I like still have this part of me that's like, oh yeah, that wall in the back parking lot, that's where we would have done this. That would have worked. So how does like, I guess that is the other question is how planned, premeditated, is this just a dude who shows up is like, hey, I got a cooler full of fish that we're not going to use for deep sea bait or something? Or was this like a calendared 4 months out kind of thing?
Yeah, I planned and this was my brainchild. I arranged for the fish to be brought from a volunteer's workplace. I knew how easy it'd be to access things, and I had a hands on. This is also not unrelated to a similar stunt where we also had massive like softball fields here at on the campus of this mega church, because of course we did. And we'd have one kid who volunteered to wear football shoulder pads and a football helmet, and go out into the field. And then their teammates would use the same water balloon launcher, but this time to launch a raw egg up into the air. The goal being to try to hit the guy with the football equipment, and the football person's goal being to get underneath the egg. Like, you want to be hit. That's the point. I have no plausible theory about what lesson could have come from that or how we could have tortured any of that. I don't know. But it was epic. And most of these things, look, they're designed to just get kids to have a good time and tell their parents they want to come back so that they and their parents and therefore their money return and keep coming back, right? That was, in a weird way, the youth groups, as much as we deserve to be looked down on, and I join you in that effort, we were like the PR. We were publicity.
Yep.
We
were totally.
Very much about, like, as much as the teaching pastors, we're the one putting butts in seats, all right? Like, we're getting people to show up. Because youth group, I mean, junior high and high school are hard enough as it is, right? So for the first time in that kid's life, they are in a family dynamic where they're maybe struggling to fit in. Junior high sucks. High school sucks. You're like, oh, I actually want to go to this place where my friends are going and it's fun and nobody takes it too seriously. Now mom and dad are like, well, we actually better pay attention and go and we'll give it a chance too. So it was like a full-on like on-ramp. This was a way of getting families in the area like into the church and plugged in, right? So I now understand that was my dramatic function. I didn't.
No, I think that's exactly right. And so it is easy to look down on youth ministry, but you know, if you get the 13-year-old who is part of a family and that family's sort of lukewarm about church. They show up once a month, but now that 13-year-old is all about youth group. They want to go every Sunday. They want to go to the beach trip. They want to go to summer camp. That family's going to, they're going to be in church. And that's what your function is as a youth minister. And you know, not in total, right? I mean, I love, to this day, when I think about youth ministry, I love those kids to death. And some of them are listening. I love them so much. And I think about that time as a time of like great privilege to like be part of like young people's lives and help them when they're vulnerable, help them when they're trying to figure life out. But
yeah,
here's the thing, Dan, and that this is serious and not serious at the same time is like we're sitting there on a Wednesday at like, you know, 2 p.m. And for 10 Wednesdays in a row, we have played dodgeball. We have played capture the flag. And we're feeling this immense pressure that we're talking about to be like a really cool youth group that attracts kids from our community. Like, we need to be this like PR firm and entry point for people to come to this church. So we're feeling pressure. We want the kids who are there to think we're super cool and fun, not just boring old Christians with three-piece suits and Ned Flanders and all that. And so you get to this point, and I remember this clearly, Jason, of like, I don't know what to do. What are we going to do tonight? We don't have a game to play. We need a cool game. And then it just spiraling where Jason's like, what if we got fish? You know, and like, it's like you're sitting in a room at like 2 p.m. and you really just should just take a walk and not do this, but you don't. And it's like, what if we got fish? And we took the water balloon launcher we have downstairs and we like launched it into the wall. And then like, Jason, what if, yeah, like Jason's in there like, what if I like drew a mural, you know, of like something and it was like Satan or something. And we were like, yeah, we're the fishers of men that are like going to obliterate Satan, you know, and we'll do
this
that.
This has to be so much like that. These are the precursors to conversations that execs were having at social media companies decades later, where they're like, how do we drive user engagement? How do we keep them, you know, like we want to retain these users. We want to get them addicted. We want to keep them coming back. Get clicks. That's what we were talking about, getting clicks pre, you know, social media age.
This is also how Kevin Costner got Waterworld made, I think. You know what I mean?
I think that's a powerful metaphor. And honestly, I feel like, well, I could teach a 4-week series on it.
So thanks for listening to this free preview of our Swag episode. In order to get access to the full episode and so much more, become a Straight White American Jesus premium subscriber by clicking the link in the show notes. It'll take you like 2 clicks, I promise. In addition to getting access to this episode, you'll have access to the entire Swag archive, over 550 episodes. You'll also get an extra episode every month, bonus content every week, Discord access, and so much more. All that for less than $6 a month, and it helps us keep our flag up and continue to safeguard democracy from religious nationalism, extremism, and rising authoritarianism. Check it out. It's not hard, I promise.
Axis Mundi.